I am pulling up a poem here. Okay. There we go. This last week, I was reminded, and I've been thinking about a really pivotal time in my life that was really important in how I approached my faith and what it meant. It all centers on this one question: where is God? Where is God? It's tempting to be able to say, God is out there. Or it's tempting to be able to say, no, God is in here. But what I remember is, as a teenager, that there was this huge wrestling that I had to ask, so where is this God? I almost didn't preach this sermon because I thought, this is just so simple. But then it occurred to me, no. It's not that simple, and there are huge amounts of us that wrestle with this very question. How do we identify where God is in our lives? This all began for me back at the time when I was 14 years old. This was the time when I actually found a pair of blue jeans that fit. Just try finding my inseam on a regular blue jean. And with that, I started wearing the belt. This was the coolest belt, and I don't know where my dad ever got this, but it was this black heavy leather belt with a cast aluminum belt buckle, and on it was this super cool screaming eagle. It was this eagle diving out of the sky with open talons, and underneath it were these three words, Gott mit uns. Oh, it was German, and it meant God with us. That, I have no idea how this ever got over to the United States. This, I'm pretty sure, was a German Air Force, a Nazi Air Force belt and buckle. I wore that belt for years. And it was as I wore it that every single morning when I would buckle that up, that I would read those words, Gott mit uns, Gott mit uns, Gott mit uns. And after a few hundred and thousand times of wearing that, I began to really wrestle inside of my theology because I finally realized, wait a minute. What they were saying was, as the Germans went into battle, God is with us. But I had uncles that had served in World War II, and I knew that God was with them. And so here you had all of these enemies. You had the Americans and the Norwegians and the French and the Germans and the Austrians and who were all going to the battlefield saying, Gott mit uns, God is with us. It was very difficult for me to fathom why would you think that God was only on your side? Because the fact of the matter is that God is not just on your side. And when it comes to moments of out-and-out brutality, violence, and killing, God's on nobody's side. I wrestled with that belt buckle for years. Where is God? Where is God? This last week, I started doing some thinking about Edgar Allan Poe. Edgar Allan Poe was one of the most formative authors inside of our American history. He wrote The Raven, The Fall of the House of Usher, The Pit and the Pendulum, The Cask of Amontillado, The Telltale Heart, all of these amazing dark stories. I ran across a poem of his that I had not known before, and I want to share it with you. It's called The Dream Within a Dream. And it's written, I think, to a lover of his, because he says this: take this kiss upon the brow, and in parting from you now, thus much let me avow, you are not wrong who deem that my days have been a dream. Yet if hope has flown away in a night or in a day, in a vision or in none, is it therefore the less gone? All that we see or seem is but a dream within a dream. I stand amid the roar of a surf-tormented shore, and I hold within my hand grains of golden sand. How few, and yet how they creep through my fingers to the deep while I weep, while I weep. Oh God, can I not grasp them with a tighter grasp? Oh God, can I not save one from the pitiless wave? Is all that we see or seem but a dream within a dream? A dream within a dream. A dream within a dream. I like that idea. So let me propose to you today that you and I live a dream within a dream. We dream of all the things that are going on in our lives. We dream for our family. We dream for our nation. We dream for our community. We dream for our church. We dream for our own lives. We dream of all these things that we want to see happen. And we dream of a God. Or is it that God dreams of us? It's a dream within a dream. We dream of God, and God dreams of us. We search for God, and God searches for us. We imagine God, and God imagines us. We create God, and God creates us. I love the saying, we all create God in our own image. You know that in the book of Genesis, that there are these wonderful creation stories. And I love this image in Genesis, in chapter 2, where God comes into the garden and with God's own hands creates Adam from the dirt and then breathes into Adam. Where's God? Where's God? Is God out there or is God here as close as our own breath? Now, the answer to me is both. But we need to wrestle with that. Where is God? What does it mean to search for this God when we live as a dream within a dream? We create God, but God is always creating us. Here's where part of our problem comes from. It was in the 1700s that we began to wrestle with the Enlightenment. We began to wrestle with the Industrial Revolution, and the world became a radically different place to live. The Industrial Revolution began with some of these amazing inventions that we just take for granted that happened in the early to mid-1700s. The steam engine, trains, transportation, steamships, things that even now seem old and quaint, at that time, boy, they were cutting edge, and they absolutely changed the world. And in England and across Europe, what we saw was that new forms of industrialization came. There were new methods of making steel. Just the simplicity of a stick pin, a needle, revolutionized what was happening inside our world. The revolution of how we make cotton and linen, that now we don't have to do it all on hand looms. Now we can use steam-powered and water-powered factories. And this took an enormous amount of workers. And so these workers came in from off the farm into the city. In the mid-1700s, London was already up over 1 million people. Prague in the Czech Republic, in the middle of that huge, monstrous Habsburg Empire, was over 1.9 million people. And you better believe that turned the world absolutely upside down. Now, here's what happened inside of this. As industrialization came and we gained more power to create, we didn't need as much of the creator. And so what we found was that God became more distant. There was a movement through deism. There was a movement that said maybe God is the type of a creator who made the earth, wound it up like a big toy, set it out in heaven, and then stood back and is watching it go. Where is God? Starting in the 17th century with the Enlightenment and the Industrial Revolution, the answer was God is out there. Where's God? So now all of a sudden, this image of the Creator God breathing life into Adam and therefore into you and me has now changed. Instead of God being here in us, around us, God is out there. Where's God? Where's God? We are living a dream within a dream. We are dreaming God, and God is dreaming us. We are creating God, and God is creating us. We are imagining God, and God is imagining us. We live this dream within the dream. So which is it? This was a huge piece of wrestling for me. As I clasped that belt buckle every morning, Gott mit uns, Gott mit uns, Gott mit uns. And I had to wrestle with, so where is God? And I came to realize it's not about a God that's out there and a God that's in here. No, no, it's not either or, it's both and. God is out there. At the end of this ever-expanding universe, God is already there. And God is right here in every breath that I take, filling me. We move and swim like a fish in water. We move and swim in God's life itself. This amazing dream within a dream. As we are constantly creating our images of God and constantly being created by God. By God. What then is it that God expects of us? John chapter 13. As Jesus sat around the table with his disciples and he said to them, "This is the new commandment that I give to you. Love one another. This is what I expect." This was after Judas had left the room. Jesus was talking even about Judas. "This commandment I give to you, that you love one another." Even someone who is difficult to love needs to be loved. Even someone that is impossible to tolerate needs to be loved. They deserve this love that God has given. A grace and a love that cannot be earned. Every single one of us moves and lives and dwells inside of that love. So what then are we supposed to do with that? This is the power of the 11th chapter of Acts. This is the power of Peter and his conversion. Peter was Jewish, Jewish, Jewish. In the Jewish culture, no matter what part of Israel you were from, the north, the south, the east, the west, or elsewhere around the world, there were 613 rules, laws that you had to obey. And many of those were dietary rules. You will not eat pork. That includes bacon. How do they do this? You will not eat shrimp. You will not eat, you will not eat, you will not eat. There are very, very set rules. And as Peter was in his home, in a trance, in a vision, in a dream, the sheet is lowered down and it's filled with all the things that he's not supposed to eat. And the command comes from God that says, "Eat it." And Peter says, "Oh, no, 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 no. I never have and I never will. It's unclean." And God, this voice of God says, "Do not declare what I have declared to be clean as unclean." Three different times this happened. And when he came out from that dream, the doorbell rang, if they had a doorbell. That knock on the door that said, "Peter, it's for you." And there stood a man who was Gentile. Peter, who was Jewish, Jewish, Jewish. And one of the things about Jewish people in that day and age is they associated just as little as possible with those who were in the Gentile world. They kept very, very close to each other, abiding by the rules and separating themselves from the world. This was radical. This was radical. And so we begin to look and to say, what was going on with Peter? Peter had a radical change of heart that day. He went home an absolutely different man, and he went and defended it to the rest of the apostles, the disciples back in Jerusalem. And he said, "Well, here's what happened." And they listened to his whole story, and they said, "Well, I guess that's what we're doing now. If this is where the Holy Spirit is guiding us, then we choose to love. This is what we are called to do." So last night at midnight, Colleen and I got back with the Black Hills State Choir. And oh, dear Spearfish and Northern Hills, you can be so proud of these kids. Oh my goodness, they were amazing on this trip as they represented you. On the first night, on the first choir of the first concert that they did, it was on May 8th. Now, you and I don't remember what that date, May 8th, means. To most of us, it means nothing. But if you will go back in your history, we actually have a name for that date. It's called VE Day. It's Victory in Europe Day. That's not what the Germans call it. They call it the end of the war. And so we were invited to sing in a Lutheran church. And that Lutheran pastor, in all of his graciousness, invited us in. It was a whole prayer service that was centered on the end of the war, the 74th anniversary of the end of World War II in Europe. And our choir got to sing in part of that liturgy. And their choir, this amazing, beautiful choir and these awesome acoustics. And the German pastor would speak in English and in German, translating for himself as he would go. And then as we entered into prayers, some of the choir members would stand and they would speak the prayers in English, and others from the audience would speak it in German. But there was an amazing moment in that. As they were winding down toward the end of the service, a hand went up, and one of the older gentlemen in the back asked, "Can I speak?" And the pastor immediately invited him up to the microphone. And he said, "I was 8 years old. On May 8th of 1945, I was 8 years old. And I stood as an 8-year old and I watched my country collapse." Can you imagine? Can you imagine what it'd be like? He did not live in the metropolitan areas. He did not have to deal with the bombing of Munich and the bombing of Berlin and the bombing of Dresden. He did not have to deal with that absolute devastation and destruction. But he had to deal with everything else that was just life inside of Germany. And he said, then, as we were in our village, one day the German tanks came. You cannot believe how big these tanks were. And when you look at it from an 8-year-old's perspective, they were monstrous. They were these mountains of metal moving down his street. We had been warned not to talk to the Americans. We had been warned not to talk with the American soldiers because they would kill us. But then what we found was that as they drove through, they didn't kill us, they didn't shoot, they didn't destroy. They would wave, and they would smile, and they would keep going. And then a tank stopped in our community, and an 8-year-old's curiosity, how can you keep an 8-year-old from something like this? They went up and began to talk to these Americans. He only knew one English word, chewing gum. And so he went to one of the tank drivers and said, "Chewing gum?" And they knew immediately, and out came the chewing gum. And that kid who was on rations in a defeated nation got to meet not just his first chewing gum, but he got to meet what was the joy of that American soldier. And he said, now as an 82-year-old, he said, "Today, I cannot tell you how thankful I am to be in this place at this time, how unbelievable it is to have an American choir and a German choir singing in the same room at the same time, to be singing in this music together. Where's God? God is not just out there. God is in here. God is not just in here. God is in this room. God is not just in this room. God was in that room. Where's God? And how are we supposed to respond to that God?" And that gentleman stood and he said, "I thank God for the fact that we have learned how to treat each other civilly. I thank God that we have learned to move past and to help each other instead of kill each other." These were amazing moments to listen to. Where's God in your life? Is God just out there? Or is God just in here? Because it's not either or, it's both and. Where's God? May it be this week that you get to wrestle with this. Where is your God? As we live this dream within a dream, as we imagine and create and think of what God is like in our lives and in our worlds, may you know that God is thinking and imagining and creating what you look like in God's world. May it be that as we live this dream within a dream together, that we know that there are places in our world where the cannons roar no more, where tanks no longer drive down dusty streets, where there is peace. But we remember simultaneously that there are places where there is not peace, where tanks absolutely come down the streets, where the missiles and the cannons do roar, and that you and I are invited into a world of peace. You and I are invited to be part of the answer, the solution in making this world good. May it be that you simply continue to ask the question, where's God? Beloved, this commandment I give to you, that you love one another. Amen. Would you pray with me? Lord of love and life, we pray that you will take these words, move them, shift them, sift them, change them, make them fit in our lives, that we might be changed. As Peter was changed, as the disciples were changed, so Lord,